Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Cole Horton, who is a historian, a games professional, a game writer, a pop culture writer, and most importantly for our discussion here, a Star Wars historian, aficionado, addict, however you want to call it. And Cole's got two new Star Wars books to talk about today. Hi, Cole.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me. everything you said is true. And it can be hard to account for sometimes, this amount of Star Wars going on with me.
Now, are you also involved in any of the Star Wars games? Because one of the books we're talking about today, Star Wars Traveler's Guide to Batuu, is actually, that's a theme park and a game?
It's a theme park. Although, I mean, it's all one universe, right? Mm-hmm. So anywhere you can, you're trying to draw the connections through. Being that my day job is working on games at EA, I do my best to make sure that whatever I'm writing has connections to the games where they can. Sometimes I'll hide some things about games or games that never quite came to fruition. I'll hide little Easter eggs in the books so that, you know, it gives you something to talk about that, you know, maybe the uber fan who feels like they know everything about Star Wars, well, maybe I can give them something new too.
Now, The Traveler's Guide to Batuu is coming out in July.
That's right.
And, yep. But the Star Wars Book of Lists is already out, correct?
June 23rd. So it's upon us shortly.
Shortly.
Not
okay.
Much longer. Yep.
Now, the Book of Lists is everything I would want from a Book of Lists. It's 100 different items that, or questions or statements that you created a list for. And I'm like, this is what a list geek would love.
Yeah, you know, we didn't hold back. And it's big, right? Because 100 of anything is a lot. And then you've got all the items on each list inside that 100. So I think it's the biggest book I've ever worked on. And, you know, it's got some of the obvious stuff, right? Like, we're going to talk about, like, Luke Skywalker's most heroic moments and all the times that Princess Leia stood up to authority. But we get really nerdy, too, and tried to find some more obscure things. Best facial hair is a whole list in the book. Lost limbs, of course. You can't have a Star Wars story without somebody losing an appendage. So we cover that sort of thing off too. It's sort of all ranging.
So I don't want to spoil too much of the book because some of the lists are actually funny. What was the most outrageous list you guys came up with?
Oh man. I'll tell you the one that I didn't think they were going to go for. I thought they like, cause the brief for the book said, hey, this should be approachable for fans of all kinds. And so we, you know, a lot of the book really focused on the films, you know, cause if you start expanding past that, these lists become really unwieldy and all of a sudden it's like War and Peace, right? The book just, you can't do it. But that said, I wanted to put some things in there that I just thought were funny. So there is a list of all the Wilhelm screams. I'm not sure if
nice.
You're familiar.
Nice.
Yeah. So all of those, you know, and that's classic Ben Burtt sound design and classic Star Wars sound design. So that's in there. The other one I didn't think they were going to let me do. I thought it was too much of a deep cut. But, you know, the way this works is you submit things in the outline and you just hope they don't notice or hope they're cool with it. And the one that got through was Warwick Davis and all of his characters that he played over the years, whose names start with W. And, huh. You know, Warwick Davis, who was Wicket mm-hmm. in Return of the Jedi, right? He was, what, 11 years old, has, I guess, literally kind of grown up with Star Wars. And over the years has been in a number of things. He's had recurring roles, in fact, that aren't Wicket. And just sort of the in-joke is almost all the characters he plays, their name begins with W.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, so we got a whole lot of those in there. And we actually had some help because, you know, so many of his roles are behind a mask. So either as an alien or a droid. And there were some I didn't even know he had played. And I got the notes back from the Lucasfilm story group that said, this is great. Here's more. And so even I learned a little bit of something when writing the book.
I will have to include a snippet of the Wilhelm scream for people so they know what we're talking about, because that I never knew that was a thing until about 10, 15 years ago. And now I can't help but point it out whenever I hear it. I'm like, oh, yeah. There it is. Oh, yeah. There it is. And it's in so many unbelievable things. I only knew of like two uses of the Wilhelm scream, but apparently this list tells me there's more.
Yeah, I mean, they're until recently they've moved away from using the Wilhelm scream, and I'm not sure why, but they're not using it in some of the more recent films. But just until a couple of years ago, it was pretty much in everything. And it's that thing, like, yeah, you have heard it over and over and over. You just maybe don't know that it has a name or know where it comes from. And so we go into that as well and kind of talk about that stock sound effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, stock sound isn't something people talk about. They point out reused footage from, you know, maybe space battles, from especially in like 70s TV shows. I can't tell you how many times the original Battlestar Galactica reused the same fighter footage. And so he's like, oh yeah, stock video footage, they reuse it to save on effects. Never dawned on me they did the same thing for sound. And to find out that there's more than just a couple Wilhelm screams in Star Wars is hilarious to me.
Yeah. So that sort of stuff is in there. And, you know, and that's only, what, two of the 100.
Mm-hmm. So how long did it take for you to put together the research for the list once you got down to the 100 they wanted?
Oh, man. unfortunately, not very long. So this book project had actually kicked off a couple of years ago. It was, I'm trying to think, before Rogue One. So it, when this was originally pitched, like, this book would come out in the lead up to Rogue One. So what was that, 2016?
Yeah.
And so me and the editor at the time had created the initial list of 100, but then for various reasons, it kind of got put on the back burner. And it sat there for years, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I got an email that said, hey, we're doing this again. So I had a little bit of time to revise those, and we sent those off for approvals, and they had some time to check them out. And they came back with no major changes. And the one request I got was, could you please add to this outline of 100, just add all the items in each list, which, you know, and normally in the writing process is that would be totally reasonable, you know, and that level of detail in an outline. But because this has kind of come up at the last minute, we didn't have a lot of time on the front end now, and it's a book of lists. So when somebody asks you, please write all the items on the list, you're kind of writing the whole book. Mm-hmm. And I had about a week and a half.
Wow.
Yeah. And so what I did was I had all the 100 topics, and I just wrote in my notebook, and I would sit there, you know, a lot of times just like watching TV at night with my wife, and sit there on the couch, and I would just sketch in my notes. And so I just kind of did that mostly for memory. And then I submitted that list off, and, you know, some time goes by and I got notes back on that. The editors at Lucasfilm were incredibly helpful. The story group at Lucasfilm, very helpful and kind of helping round out things or if I had missed anything, but especially if they knew something was coming. So when I wrote this was actually a year ago now. And so episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker had not come out yet. I didn't know really much about it at all. I don't think most of the world knew much about it, if anything. And so what I had to do was like put in my outline things that I thought might come up. So there was, you know, certain spreads and I would just write like episode 9 ? And I would send that off. And then I would get a note back that would, you know, be from the story group. And they'd say, indeed. I mean, oh, great, I know something. Wow. Like, and that would just be a placeholder. And a lot of those placeholders would just stay placeholders through most of the writing. And then in some cases, I would be asked to come in after the movie had come out and add those in, or Lucasfilm would kind of add those in themselves because all that stuff is super secret. The same thing with Mandalorian content, which of course was incredibly secret. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that was in there, we kind of rely on them.
Now, the sources that you drew from, were that they're mostly just the movies and the Mandalorian, and I'm guessing the various animated series, because there's two different versions of Clone Wars. There's Rebels. There's one where I'm missing.
Yeah, and there's like Resistance, which is another animated series from just recently. But yeah, we really focused on the movies for this, and I'm glad we did. I've watched the Clone Wars all the way through 3 times, and you know, spot checked episodes just in doing other books and research. And it really does become kind of too unwieldy when you open it up to, you know, hundreds of hours of additional stories. So kept it mostly with the films. Now, that said, there is a spread about the universe expanding and making sure that we did have a nod to a lot of those other storytelling mediums, kind of imagining people who maybe haven't seen any of that stuff or have only seen parts of the animated series or the games or even theme parks is actually in that spread. Just wanted to make sure that we had a little bit of a nod to those very important characters you need to know, right? Like Grand Admiral Thrawn is a good example, or Ahsoka Tano. Even if you've never seen those, like, they're pretty important to the history of Star Wars. And right. So I wanted to make sure those were in there. And of course, I put some game stuff in there. So Iden Versio from Star Wars Battlefront 2, or Cal Kestis from Jedi Fallen Order. Yeah, I made sure those got snuck in there too. But that spread, I don't talk about like the hardest to choose, because there's so many, and it's like, where do you draw the line, right? Like, just Clone Wars characters by themselves could have been their whole list. And now I have to account for everything that's not a film in one place and have pictures of them, right? Because it's a very, very visual book.
Oh, yeah.
And in a lot of the spreads too, there's additional copy that goes with it, right? We're not just putting a list. There's actual explanation and descriptions and or why they're on that list. And so by the time you have the name, that copy, the photos, and there's always a parenthetical with every entry that says where that character or thing could be seen. Oh man, it's just so much space. And yeah, I really had to choose, and it was hard because I knew I was going to be leaving somebody's favorite character off, right?
Never fails.
Yeah. And you know, they can tweet me about it if they're upset. I own it. It was my choice. Don't blame anybody else. But yeah, there's just so much. And mm-hmm. in part, like, that's kind of what makes Star Wars so great, is that there's so much. But we also know that's also kind of what can keep people away. You know, Star Wars can feel really daunting now that we're, 43 years into it. And there's all these stories, and they're all connected, and it can be a lot to somebody who's new to this. And every book you write could be somebody's first. And you kind of have to keep them in mind too, that, you know, I'm not just writing for somebody like myself who lives and breathes this stuff. You're writing for that person who, you know, picks it up off a coffee table, and or a kid who is just, you know, being introduced to it for the first time. So you gotta make those tough calls sometimes.
Now, one of your earlier books was Star Wars: Absolutely Everything You Need to Know.
Yeah.
Does that book ever stop expanding?
Yeah, I would hope not. Please, DK, if you'd like to write more, please contact me. You know where to find me. No, like, and that's sort of the point of Star Wars. Yeah, I've done a lot of work with fans about why is Star Wars so special, right? Why do we keep coming back to it 43 years later when, right, what, countless things have come and gone in that time? And almost nothing has reached the same sort of interest and staying power that Star Wars has. So why is that? And one of the things we hear a lot is that Star Wars is like a puzzle, but it's a puzzle with no edges, and there's still gaps in the middle. And every time you get a new Star Wars story, you're just adding to your puzzle. And it's always expanding, and you're always filling stuff in and making connections to other pieces. And that's what makes it fun. So yeah, on something like Absolutely Everything You Need to Know, it's quite a promise. like that's a bold title.
It is.
I cannot take credit for that. That was either one of the editors or somebody at Lucasfilm who came up with that. But yeah, there's a reason why we had to do an updated and expanded edition of that. And, you know, it's sort of like, that's a promise we would never make and never keep, to say it truly is absolutely everything. Or, you know, I've worked on other books like Ultimate Star Wars. Well, Ultimate as of today. But the reason we love Star Wars is that it keeps going. And I don't, you know, people are like, oh, why do I have to buy a new edition? Or, whoa, why are they adding to stuff? So would you want it any other way? Would you want Star Wars to stop? Because I sure don't. I think how bummed we'd be if we were just like, okay, it's 2018, we're done here. The world never gets the Mandalorian or Rise of Skywalker, the Clone Wars, you know, season 7. We're done, because we don't want to have to put out a new book. We would never say that. So I'm glad it keeps going. Although it is getting a little bit unwieldy just as an author now. I read and watch and play every single thing that is available in Star Wars. And I do that, you know, as a professional, of course. So it's very hard. What a terrible job I have, but there's so much. And it is kind of getting to the point where it's like, you can't memorize it all. All you can do is file away where the information sits. And you just have to know where to go and retrieve something, because you can't keep it all in your head. And, so I have a whole system for when I do research, and I you know, those little stickers they put on like legal documents that say sign here, mm-hmm. and they, like, stick to the paper. I use those a lot. and anything that's sort of interesting as I'm reading a book, I go through and I put it on those, and I kind of catalog that stuff just for a rainy day. And sometimes it's like really cool world building stuff, but a lot of times it's silly stuff like, oh, this is kind of gross and would be great for a kid's book. You get a lot of that. Like Absolutely Everything was a book about snot and farts and stuff in a lot of ways. So, you know, I have a good catalog of that too. Again, this is a very hard job.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Huh? Real tough. I could tell. twist your arm, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, I have a question. A lot of people, Star Wars fans, were, shall we say, mildly annoyed when a large section of the novels, the novelizations in the novels, were considered no longer canon. Is there a reference for the part of the Star Wars universe that was, I guess, now belongs to an alternate timeline?
Not in the Book of Lists. I mean, honestly, like, I kind of think that has been done. Pablo Hidalgo did a reader's companion a number of years ago that is as complete and as thorough as I could ever imagine anything. Like, to be honest, I don't know how marketable that book is today. And I think it's sort of a miracle that it got made, and I'm glad it did. And so if anybody wants that, I would point you back there, and it is so thorough. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful read in and of itself. And, but I think when you read that too, I'm speaking for me now, because I'm not the one that makes any calls about mm-hmm. what's canon, right. what is not. I didn't make that decision in 2013. But you do get there and you realize, man, there's a lot going on. And it was unwieldy. And there were, like, I'm making this up, but not by much. There were like 5 different guys who designed the Death Star. Well, okay, that all, you know, it was contradicting itself over the years. And for me, the change in, you know, making that old material what we now call Legends, and moving forward with sort of a single storyline with the films and the animation and the books and comics all together, honestly, like, that's a huge reason why I even get to do this today. Because while I enjoyed a lot of that older stuff, I was part of a small town Star Wars book club about that stuff. I could not speak or write as expertly about it as the people who did that stuff at the time. And only when the change was made was the slate kind of clean enough that I could come in and do what I did, because I was very much up on what was going on. As fate would have it, I would in some cases have a little bit of a hand in kind of what was being developed. And so it worked out for me. But I understand why some people might miss that in those stories, but they're still there. And hopefully people can, come to appreciate the new stuff too.
Well, like I said, some people are still fans of the books. They're not still in print, right?
They are occasionally. Yeah, they put a little Legends banner on them. And it's funny what will sometimes pop up, sort of randomly. I've actually gone back and picked up a couple of classics, like Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Mm-hmm.
First sort of expanded novel has come back out in print. The Han Solo trilogy and the Lando trilogy from back in the day, those have come back out under the Legends banner, and those are a lot of fun. And all that sort of stuff, while the stories might not be canon, and that word is so loaded, I'm doing air quotes right now, what they do still have is they're just full of ideas and inspiration. And those things get referenced a whole lot, even today. And so what's Luke say? No one's ever really gone.
Uh-huh.
Even those stories, they're never really gone.
Mm-hmm. With Splinter of the Mind's Eye, I still have my original copy bought in, 1978?
Right, yeah. And it's probably well-loved, right? Well-read.
It is.
It shows its love.
It shows its age, and I remember seeing the original Han Solo books when they came out, and I regret not getting those original covers because I thought those were kind of cool covers, but yeah. Such is life. But your other book, The Traveler's Guide to Batuu, is... I'm going to let you explain it. It's an explorer's guide to a theme park.
Yeah. So
set as a real life place.
That's right. So the whole conceit requires you to sort of believe that this place is real. So just like anywhere else in the Star Wars universe, there is this planet called Batuu. And, the guide is written by a fictional author who's a travel guide in the Star Wars universe and is a frequent traveler to this planet and is explaining everything the planet has to offer to you, the reader, in this world. Now, of course, we know Batuu is the setting for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, the Star Wars land that is at Disneyland Resort and Walt Disney World in Florida. That's a place you can visit, and you can visit this place called Black Spire Outpost while you're there. That's on the planet Batuu. So yeah, the book is written. I mean, honestly, I wrote it to be Rick Steves in space. it is my wife and I are huge fans of his. We've traveled using his travel guides across Europe, and very much modeled after the way he would talk about a place, introduce you to a place, give you really interesting facts about its history, but also give you very practical tips for while you're there. So that was a huge influence. The other influence was the old West End RPG books. And as a kid, I would always just pour through those, right? And I wasn't playing the RPG game. I wasn't sitting there with my dungeon master or anything like that. But I would pour through those just to understand facts about the world, right? And sort of imagine myself as a kid in that galaxy, and who am I, and what kind of blaster do I carry, and what kind of backpack would I have, and what kind of ship would I fly? So a lot of the facts and the resources that are in there are also to help you kind of figure out who you are when you go visit Batuu yourself.
So other than schematics for the theme park, what sort of resources did you have at hand to write this guide?
I had a lot, but surprisingly, I didn't have the theme park. So when I wrote it, the park was not open yet, or at least when I wrote most of the book, it hadn't opened yet. And, you know, I think they were still pouring concrete and it was still kind of coming together. So what I was largely working from was just, I don't know, the sort of Bible of the whole land that I think everyone was working from. And that was what Walt Disney Imagineering had put together about kind of every facet of the world and all the characters and their backstories and all the places and who runs them and everything like that. So I had this giant document and it had concept art largely and just tons of text and descriptions. What we didn't get into, and I say this just in case anyone's worried about spoilers, is we don't get into what happens on any of the attractions. So when you get on the ride, we're not going to spoil that for you. That is yours to experience. But we might give you are some interesting things that whether you know it or not, you might experience or run into on those attractions. And you're going to want that information just to make whatever you see there more rich and more fulfilling, hopefully. The other thing they provided, which was super helpful, was I don't know if you ever saw at the D23 Expo, they actually brought out the giant scaled model of the land. And it was all the buildings and all the streets and this massive model. Well, what they were able to do, I guess it was modular, and they're able to sort of break it down and provide me ground level photography of all the different streets and all the different exteriors. And so I was able to kind of figure out like what's the path someone might take through that land. And if you know, when I'm riding, I say, look to your left or look to your right, I kind of know where I am, even though that place didn't even exist yet. And that was super helpful. I could kind of do that. I did a little bit of Photoshopping of images and maps and stuff just to make sure everything was sort of in the same place and on both coasts. It was probably the most stretching project I've ever done in terms of having to use your imagination just to try to envision whatever it is you're reading. Cause I not only have to like read something for the first time, I then have to convey it to someone and it doesn't exist quite yet. So
nice. And that was what I was going to ask. Are the maps and the trails, so to speak, that you follow in the book, are they accurate to where they actually are on the ground in the park? And it sounds like they are.
They are. Yeah. No, I think shockingly so. The first thing that I did, like the moment I got the document, was find the two maps of the Disneyland version and the Walt Disney World version in Hollywood Studios. And I overlaid them in Photoshop, because I needed to confirm that these places were the same. Because if they weren't, how was I going to do that, right? Like, how do you write one guide for both of them? Mm-hmm. Good news is they're very similar. Certainly the streets and the buildings and all of that. They have some differences around the edges and some spacing, but all of that can be accounted for or just ignored largely. So it was perfect. And I realized, okay, well, I only have to write one version of this. That's good. And then I just had to figure out like where sort of everything was and where would you come in, and ultimately landed on like, because, you know, in universe, right, you could fly your spaceship and land at Black Spire Outpost in the spaceport. Or maybe you take one of the shuttles from one of the nearby communities. But let's be honest, you and me, when we go visit the park itself, we're going to walk in. And so I needed to find a place like what's the most logical place someone might walk in? And why would they even walk in? Like, this is the sort of nerdy detail I had to think about. I'm like, OK, well, they would need to walk in. Maybe they parked outside. Well, there was another novel that had come out just before this called Thrawn Alliances. And that book, in part, takes place at Black Spire Outpost. And there in that book, it mentions there are I think Padme lands outside of town and walks into Black Spire. Like, great. There's a landing field out there. Let's just assume most travelers come in from there. And that'll be the starting point of the walk, and then able to sort of piece together the normal path and what you would see and kind of lay it out there.
I am just waiting for somebody to take this book, dress up in their Star Wars cosplay, go to Galaxy's Edge and walk through it like they're a real tourist.
That's right. Their nose kind of in the book. They're like pointing, you know, they're seeing all the sights. It should work that way.
That's awesome.
And in fact, if somebody did that, they would, I think, would get an even more rich experience than they would get if they just kind of went on their own. One of the things, now having been there in real life, I realized is that so much care and thought was put into backstories and characters for everything that's there. And you just may not even realize it when you're walking through. And there's a lot of examples, but like each of the shops has an owner. And maybe when you're there, the owner isn't available at the moment. But we talk about who that owner is and why they're that way. And it starts to explain like, well, why were some of these choices made? And why did the shop look the way it looks? Or, you know, why is it so dirty and unkept? All because of the characters and who owns them. And all those characters have relationships as well. They all know each other. And we kind of delve into a little bit of that. And yeah, we just tell you details you may not know otherwise. Like, I'll tell you one of my favorite details. One of the things that kind of made me just like stop and smile awkwardly is the bathrooms. there is a radio station that plays in the refreshers. That's what we call them in Universe. And those restrooms, you just stop and you listen. Like you're getting Star Wars and you're in the restroom. And normally that isn't where you want to hang out. But there, like those details are there and you enjoy that while you're there. But then if you read the book, you know what that radio station is and a little bit about that station and who that personality, that DJ is that's talking. And anyway, it kind of rounds out the whole experience. Not mandatory, but I think adds to it a lot.
Radio station is not something I would have ever guessed was on Batuu, but okay, cool. Good thing to know.
And it's actually incredibly informative, and it just kind of quirky and fun.
Cool. Now, you mentioned your day job was at EA Games. Now, how involved are you with the Star Wars games, the Marvel games? Because you mentioned before, you're a big Marvel fan too.
Yeah, so for the past 5 years, I've worked on a variety of different Star Wars games at EA, mostly on the marketing side. So nothing anybody like really cares about, nothing interesting. All the great creative choices that you see in those games, or any of the characters and stories or game designs or modes and features you love, that's not me. You can thank some much more talented people than me. But yeah, it's been good to kind of be along for that process as well, and kind of living and breathing Star Wars all the time. I don't work on Marvel games, but am a huge Marvel fan. I've written a Marvel book, and I've written for Marvel.com and done some other things for them. Yeah, you know, I don't know what it is about me. I feel like every time I get really into something, I feel like I have to make it my job.
true sign and, of a geek. True sign of a geek, right?
Yeah, and Star Wars has largely been that for the past 5 years, and it's the best job in the world.
Now, you did mention there's another book coming up later this year.
Yeah, talk about titles. This one's called The Star Wars Book. The Star Wars Book.
The only one.
yep. So co-wrote that with Pablo Hidalgo and Dan Zare. So that will be coming out in November. I'm excited for everybody to see it. It's another kind of big reference book, but more, I guess, more essay driven than just like lots of, you know, pictures with little words pointed at items and stuff. So a little bit of a change of pace for me. And yeah, excited for that too.
Awesome. Well, we will be happy to have you and any of the other guys working on that to come back when that book is actually ready to be talked about.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Can't speak for them, but count me in anytime. I've never met a microphone I don't like, so happy to talk.
Awesome. Now, where can folks find you online in case they want to nitpick about something on the lists?
Well, I welcome them as long as they're nice about it. I can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Cole Horton. Just that simple.
Cool. Well, Cole, thank you so much today for sharing your passion for Star Wars with us.
Yeah, happy to do it.
Again, the books are Star Wars Book of Lists and Galaxy's Edge Traveler's Guide to Batuu, both of which are coming out in June and July. So we'll have links to those where you can find them. And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And in case you are not aware of what the Wilhelm Scream is, there is a delightful Wikipedia entry that tells us that as of 2020, it has been used in over 400 films and scenes since it was first used, I think they said 1950 or 1951. And here is what that scream sounds like. And now that you know what it is now cemented in your mind. And every time you are watching a movie, and you hear some random background scream, you're going to say, wait, that's Wilhelm. Stop yourself before you start counting and mentally recording where you've heard it, because it will drive you mad. Trust me. That said, keep an eye on the website or the Twitter feed in the upcoming weeks, because as soon as both of Cole's books, The Traveler's Guide to Batuu and The Book of Lists, we're going to be giving away a pair of those, the set, both of them. So I just have to come up with a good bit of Star Wars trivia to stump you with and to weed out the professional contesters who lurk and try to pounce into my contests and take my prizes away from you guys, the folks who actually love and listen to us. So there is that. Gotta be sneaky these days. But if you have any questions or comments related to Star Wars, be it movies, TV series, I can't really help a whole lot for the games, but I'm sure if someone had a question relating to the Star Wars books that Michael Stackpole wrote, the X-Wing books, and I think he did 2 or 3 New Jedi Order books. I'd have to go look that up. I'm sure I could ask him questions on your behalf. That saying, I actually had the original comic books put out by Marvel. I even somewhere around here still have the big oversized Star Wars one. It's like the size of a small poster. It's a huge book. It's water damaged, but I still have it. Yes, and reiterating my personal preferences, Rogue One is still the best of the newer movies. I will defend the premise that Phantom Menace was supposed to set up, because I think Phantom Menace was a brilliant Machiavellian political play a gambit of literal galactic proportions, and the intrigue set up by that movie, by Phantom Menace, was marred by ill-fated marketing decisions and just no stomach for a strong through line. Playing Palpatine as Machiavelli and making everyone around him fight each other while he reaped the political and financial benefits of all of the fires he had set all over the galaxy. Yeah, while sitting back there gloating and doing his Mr. Burns impression, it would have been a glorious trilogy, but we got Jar Jar and pod races. Yeah. So yeah, Rogue One rules. As someone who saw the original trilogy in its pre-edited formats, who saw them in the theater as an impressionable youngster, yeah, Rogue One gave me that feeling back. None of the prequels did. Phantom Menace came close. Force Awakens came close. I thought The Last Jedi had promise, but it was too long. Rise of Skywalker. I am going to reserve judgment on that because I have to watch it again with a more critical eye. There were some things in that that took place that I was unhappy with, and I'm hoping some distance and time will allow me to view that with a more critical eye. I don't know when I'll get a chance to do that, but I will. And I will let you know. But based on what I remember, my disappointment is not likely to be ameliorated. That said, still, Rogue One rules. So if you have any questions or comments on Star Wars or any other fandom that is close to your heart, please give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts. They've changed the name again, and I don't remember it correctly, but Google, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcast. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Those reviews let people know that you are enjoying the show and maybe they should check it out for themselves. Every review and rating helps our profile on these platforms, so thank you. You can follow us on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. You can follow us on YouTube and Facebook. We're Slice of Sci-Fi there. And of course, there's the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, check out other interviews we have done. Check out some movie reviews, TV reviews. I am really trying hard to catch up on the backlog. The pandemic lockdown should have given me more time to do stuff, but no. I am doing the best that I can. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping support our efforts here and at our sister shows, Writers After Dark, Babylon Podcast, Charlie Jade, and more. I really still am working on those reference sites, and you're helping support those as well. If you can, even during these tough times, help support the efforts here, Patreon is the place to go, patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if a monthly pledge is something you'd rather not commit to at this time, use our PayPal link. Once, twice, three times a year, whatever fits your budget, all is welcome, all is appreciated. That link is paypal.me/scifisummer. And remember, people who are patrons are eligible for perks. And we have a lot of perks here, a lot of books to find new homes for. So keep your eyes open on your Patreon messages and emails. But that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.